Members, I'm going to call the meeting to order unofficially, although today we're not voting on anything, I guess unofficial is an okay way to begin. I wish we had a quorum, but we'll wait to approve the minutes. Today we're going to walk through the delete all to 1591. Ms. Larson will assist us in doing that. And then following the walkthrough, we will hear from those in the audience who would like to express their support, concerns, or neutrality on this bill, on what will become the Education Innovation Policy Omnibus Bill. So with that, thank you, Ms. Larson, for your hard work on this. I know that you have worked long and hard since actually the beginning of session as we began to take a look at what we thought would be great policy for our children in this state and for our teachers and for our parents. So, members, let's turn our attention to Article 1, and Ms. Larson will begin to walk us through this.
Madam Chair, members, this is an overview of House File 1591, the Delete Everything Amendment labeled H1591DE1. What I propose to do is to go through each article to give a very brief description of the substance and also indicate the origins of these various provisions, since all of them represent proposals placed before the committee earlier during this session. Article 1 is an article on educator preparation, licensure, and accountability. Section 1 is a combination of the proposal of Representative Loon, House File 2, a student teaching proposal, House File 384, and a section from a Barrett Bill, 1209. Paragraph B directs the Board of Teaching to allow teacher candidates to submit essentially equivalent ACT or SAT passing scores in lieu of the college level test scores. Paragraph D, which is from House File 384, proposes a school year-long student teaching program. Paragraph N, which was from Representative Barrett's Bill 1209, directs the Board of Teaching to adopt rules on suicide prevention training. Paragraph O is again from House File 2. It directs the Board of Teaching to adopt rules to license out-of-state teacher candidates, and it lists a number of the rule requirements. Sections 2, 3, and 5 are proposals from House File 244A on collecting educator data, both on the preparation programs for educators as well as educator performance. 244 was combined with House File 642, which was a Representative Erickson bill, and it directs the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators, in cooperation with MACD and Minnesota Colleges and Universities with board-approved teacher preparation programs, to collect and report summary data on both teacher and school administrator preparation programs and also the performance outcomes of the graduates of these programs. Paragraph B in Section 2 describes the summary data on teachers. Paragraph C describes the summary data on school administrators. Paragraph D describes the data on teachers who finish their probationary period and receive an offer of a continuing contract. Paragraph E is directed to data on probationary teachers whose contracts were not renewed. Paragraph F is directed to data on school principals and vice principals who finish their probationary period and receive an ongoing contract. And paragraph G is directed to data on principals and vice principals whose contracts were not renewed. Section 3, like Sections 2 and 5, do relate to the reporting of summary data. Section 3 is the direction to the Board of Teaching to publish the data or longitudinal data on the website. Section 4 comes from a bill that Representative Erickson carried, House File 1075. It requires retired school principals to continue to amass continuing education requirements they were previously exempted. And Section 5, like Sections 2 and 3, again, are on summary data on principal preparation program outcomes. Section 6 is from House File 2. It directs the Board of Teaching to license qualified out-of-state teacher candidates. Section 7 is both House File 2 and a bill that Representative Bennett carried, House File 500. There is a direction to the Board of Teaching and also to the Board of School Administrators to automatically revoke an individual's teaching license if that individual is convicted of specific crimes implicating children. Section 8 is licensure by a portfolio. It is part of House File 2. There is a direction to the Board of Teaching to notify candidates who submit a portfolio for teacher licensure whether the department approved their portfolio, and also to help candidates revise their portfolio in order to successfully demonstrate their competence. Section 9 on applicants trained in other states is from House File 2. It directs the board to establish both criteria and streamline procedures to recognize the experience and credentials of an out-of-state applicant for a Minnesota teaching license. Subdivision 2 directs the Board of Teaching to issue a Minnesota teaching license to an out-of-state applicant who meets certain specified criteria, and the criteria are specified in the various paragraphs of Subdivision 2. Subdivision 3 directs the Board of Teaching to enter into interstate agreements for teacher licensure so that fully certified teachers from adjoining states may transfer their certification to Minnesota and receive a Minnesota teaching license without need for exams or other preparation requirements. Section 10 is another section from House File 2. It allows nonprofit corporations organized for an education-related purpose that partners with a college or university or consults with a college or university with a teacher preparation program to provide teacher preparation programs that would allow candidates to acquire limited-term licenses in preparation for a standard license. Paragraph B of that section requires a person with a limited-term license to pass a skills test or attain essentially equivalent ACT or SAT passing scores. Section 11 is from House File 2. It requires the Board of Teaching to use non-traditional criteria to determine the qualifications of program instructors. Section 12 is from House File 2. It directs the Board of Teaching to issue a Minnesota teaching license to a qualified candidate who attains qualifying scores on skills, pedagogy, and content tests and is recommended for licensure. Section 13 is from House File 2. It would allow school districts and charter schools to hire non-licensed community experts after trying to obtain acceptable licensed teachers for the particular course or subject without attaining prior permission from the Board of Teaching. Section 14 is from House File 2. It would exempt a part-time vocational or career and technical education program teacher from licensure requirements. Section 15 is from House File 2. It allows a local school board to negotiate an unrequested leave of absence plan for probationary teachers, which would be an alternative to the current probationary teachers' at-will employment status. Section 16 comes from House File 246 on mentors. There is a cross-reference to the statutory teacher mentorship program currently in statute. Paragraph D is from House File 2. It prohibits school administrators from placing students in the classroom of a teacher with the lowest evaluation rating in the previous school year unless no other teachers are available. Section 17 is from House File 2. Paragraph A directs the school board and the teachers to negotiate an unrequested leave of absence plan. Paragraph B applies beginning in the 2017-2018 school year. It would require school boards to place teachers on unrequested leave of absence based on their licensure field, evaluation outcomes and effectiveness category or rating, and other locally determined criteria such as teacher seniority. Paragraph C outlines the procedures for a hearing to establish whether a district met certain teacher evaluation criteria. Paragraph D would prohibit the use of evaluation outcomes and effectiveness categories in those circumstances where the principal evaluating the teacher is on an improvement plan. Section 18 is from House File 2. It makes current law on unrequested leave of absence applicable through the 2016-2017 school year only. It creates a 5-year right to reinstatement for those teachers placed on unrequested leave of absence who are categorized as effective or better, and terminates after one school year the right of reinstatement to those teachers who are placed on unrequested leave of absence who are categorized as ineffective or less. Sections 19, 20, and 21 replicate Section 16, 17, and 18 that we've just reviewed. However, 16, 17, and 18 apply to first-class city school districts. 16, 17, and 18 apply to school districts generally, and 19, 20, and 21 apply to first-class city school districts, and these sections are all from House File 2. Section 22 comes from House File 246 on mentors. It amends the staff development statute. It allows teacher-to-teacher mentoring as one of the listed activities for staff development, and would allow a teacher mentor stipend. Section 23 is also from House File 246. It again amends staff development statutory provisions. It includes teacher mentorship programs among the activities that are eligible for staff development revenue. Section 24, again, is from House File 246. It amends current law regarding teacher mentoring programs. It allows school districts to develop and implement mentoring programs for teachers who are both new to the profession or district, and would also allow mentoring programs for other teachers as well. Section 25 is from House File 2. It addresses circumstances related to district consolidation. It would assign the most effective teachers with the greatest seniority to the district receiving the most students, and has alternative assignments for the remaining teachers. Section 26 is from House File 2. It amends provisions in PELRA. It prohibits a school board and the exclusive representative of the teachers from executing an employment contract unless it contains an unrequested leave of absence plan or a plan for discontinuing or terminating teachers. House File 27 is, Section 27 is from House File 2. It directs the Board of Teaching to report to the legislature on agreements to grant full licensure to qualified out-of-state teaching candidates. Section 28 is from House File 789, a bill that Representative Bly authored. It encourages the Board of Teaching, in collaboration with various entities and other interested stakeholders, to submit to the legislature a proposal for providing project-based learning. Section 29 is a repealer from House File 2. It would repeal the statutory unrequested leave of absence plan for teachers generally in statute beginning the 2017-2018 school year.
Thank you, Ms. Larson.
And Madam Chair, that's Article 1.
I'll give you just a little break here, members. I'll call the meeting officially to order. Representative Christian moves approval of the minutes from March 13. Is there any discussion? No discussion on the test of Mr. Hellier. Okay, that's very good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The minutes are approved, and Mr. Hellier has done a very good job this session in following his English teacher's direction. Believe me, we work on these. He's excellent. He's just very good. Thank you, Ms. Larson, for Article 1 description, and now we'll move to Article 2. We're on page 32. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members, Article 2 encompasses statewide standards and student assessments. Section 1 is from a bill that Representative Bennett introduced, House File 1392. It would require high school students enrolled in grade 8 in the 2014-15 school year and later to demonstrate their understanding of required academic standards on state-developed tests instead of a nationally normed college entrance exam as a condition of graduating from high school. Section 2 is a bill that Representative Whelan introduced, House File 638. It postpones until the 2020-2021 school year the review and revision of the state math standards. Section 3 is a provision from the department bill, House File 1591. It would direct school districts to use world language standards developed by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. Section 4 is another department proposal on credit equivalencies. It allows an agriculture, science, or career and technical education credit to fulfill an elective science credit or a chemistry or physics credit if certain requirements are met. Paragraph E, which was a bill that Representative Anderson introduced, House File 672, would allow a computer science credit to fulfill a math credit. Section 5 is again from the bill that Representative Bennett introduced, House File 1392. It includes students' performance on the MCAs among the performance measures that are used to determine school district and school site progress in creating the world's best workforce. Section 6 is from the department bill. It makes a technical change by striking a cross-reference to the EPAS program offered by the ACT. Section 7 is another provision of the Bennett bill, House File 1392. It requires the Education Commissioner to annually administer computer adaptive reading and math assessments aligned with state academic standards to all students in grades 3 through 8, and it provides for a transition by listing permissible assessments in anticipation of changes in the state testing regimen. Paragraph C requires students enrolled in grade 8 in the 2014-2015 school year and later to take the MCAs in order to graduate. Paragraph D strikes language directing the Education Commissioner to contract for assessments aligned with state standards that include college career and readiness benchmarks. It also strikes language on requiring assessments to be predictive of a nationally normed assessment for career and college readiness. Paragraph E requires a nationally recognized college entrance exam to be offered to students at no cost in grade 11 or 12. It strikes language requiring a college placement diagnostic exam and career exploration elements. Paragraph G strikes language requiring school districts and schools annually to use the career exploration elements in the statewide assessments, and also requiring students in grade 10 or 11 who are not academically ready to take a college placement diagnostic exam. Paragraph I strikes language directing the Education Commissioner to determine alignment between statewide assessments and state academic standards, and to seek federal approval to replace federally required assessments with statewide assessments. Paragraph J directs the Education Commissioner, in consultation with the Minsky Chancellor, to identify minimum score guidelines that demonstrate readiness for a certificate-level program or a two-year or a four-year college program. Paragraphs M, N, and O require the Commissioner to annually administer computer adaptive reading and math tests aligned with state academic standards to all students in grades 3 through 8. Section 8, again from the Bennett bill, House File 1392, makes a number of conforming changes. Section 9, again from the Bennett bill, House File 1392, makes the fiscal year 2014 appropriation for the EPAS program available through fiscal year 2020. And Madam Chair, Section 10, the repealer is again from the Bennett bill, House File 1392, and it repeals the EPAS program offered by the ACT. And Madam Chair, that's Article 2.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And we'll proceed to Article 3, Educating Students and Young Children.
Madam Chair, members, Article 3 encompasses educating students and young children. Section 1 is from a Norton bill, House File 702. It strikes language creating world language proficiency high achievement certificates. Section 2 is also from the Norton Bill. It establishes voluntary bilingual and multilingual seals to recognize students who demonstrate either an advanced low level or an intermediate high level of functional proficiency in listening, speaking, reading, and writing on the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages proficiency tests. Among other things, this section allows districts and charter schools to periodically assess students' level of language proficiency and to use trained evaluators when other assessments are unavailable. It directs MNSCU institutions to award college credits to students who receive a state bilingual or multilingual seal, and allows MNSCU to award credits to a student who achieves a world language proficiency certificate. Finally, it encourages the University of Minnesota to similarly award credits consistent with this provision. Sections 3, 4, and 5 are from a bill that Representative Dabney introduced to require the collecting and reporting of data on homeless and highly mobile students. Section 6 is from House File 217, a bill that Representative Seltzer introduced. It allows 9th and 10th grade students to enroll in concurrent world language courses that are already available to 11th and 12th grade students and that are consistent with world language standards and proficiency seals and certificates. Section 7 is from the department bill. It makes a parent under age 21 who is eligible for an early learning scholarship to pursue post-secondary training or education as a condition of eligibility. It makes children who are eligible for the early learning scholarship under the Federal Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant eligible to receive state early learning scholarships when the federal government grant ends. Section 8, another department provision, allows the commissioner to prioritize applications for early learning scholarships. Section 9, also from the department bill, strikes language that would require any program accepting early learning scholarships to use the revenue to supplement and not supplant federal funding. Paragraph C in Section 9 declares a provider ineligible to participate in the scholarship program if the provider is disqualified for the reasons listed in that paragraph. Section 10, again from the department, requires an early learning scholarship program provider to maintain and make available to the commissioner records regarding program participation and payment. Section 11 is from the department. Among other things, it requires scholarships to be used in a program that a child attends consistently. Madam Chair, sections 12 through 24 come from House File 1591. They are the proposals the department made regarding American Indian education programs, requirements, participation, procedures, etc. Madam Chair, Section 25 comes from House File 702. It allows the Education Commissioner to recommend to the legislature how to assess students' foreign language proficiency when the valid and reliable assessments are not available. This is a report that the Commissioner is encouraged to make. Section 26 is from House File 1591, the Department Bill. It repeals two sections, one having to do with improving graduation rates for students with emotional or behavioral disorders, and the other provision has to do with an annual report on learning and development revenue, including K-6 class sizes. Madam Chair, that's Article 3.
Thank you very much, and now we'll proceed, members, to listen to Ms. Larson describe Article 4 education programs. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, Article 4 covers education programs. A number of the sections in Article 4 are from a bill that Representative Miller introduced, House File 197, on flexible learning year programs that districts may establish without commissioner approval. These provisions appear in Sections 1, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 16. Section 1 authorizes the board of a school district instead of the Commissioner of Education to approve a four-day week school calendar. Section 2, which is not part of the Miller proposal, comes from House File 332. This is a bill Representative Runbeck introduced on early literacy. It establishes requirements for local literacy plans. Madam Chair, Section 3 is a department proposal. It allows a student in grade 10 to substitute another reading assessment when enrolling in a career and technical education course offered under the PSEO program. Section 4 is a combination of two bills. Representative Will's bill, House File 727, would strike language restricting advertising of financial benefits regarding PSEO courses to secondary students. Paragraph B, which is a department proposal, prohibits enrolling students in courses that are not college level except when the student is enrolled in a graduation incentives program and is enrolled full-time in a middle or early college program with a well-defined pathway to earn a post-secondary degree or credential. Section 5 is from a bill that Representative Erdahl introduced, House File 982. It would require all Minsky institutions to give full credit to a student enrolling in any Minsky institution who, as a high school PSEO student, completed a PSEO course or program for post-secondary credit. This is part of a bill with several sections addressing transfer curriculum. And again, sections 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are from House File 197. This is the Miller proposal to allow a flexible learning year program without need for commissioner approval. Section 11 is from a bill that Representative Mullery introduced, House File 1094. It requires home visiting programs to include information on early brain development. Section 12 is from a bill from Representative Runbeck, House File 332. It defines dyslexia in the context of early literacy programs and plans. Section 13 is another section from Representative Erdahl's bill on transfer curriculum, House File 982. It would require all Minsky institutions to give full credit to PSEO students who complete post-secondary credit or receive post-secondary credit for a post-secondary course. Section 14 is from a bill that Representative Freeburg introduced, House File 394. It requires the Education Commissioner to make recommendations to the legislature on teacher preparation and licensure requirements for service learning. Section 15, again, is another section from the transfer curriculum bill that Representative Erdahl introduced, 982. It directs the Minsky Commissioner to prepare and submit to the legislature a report on implementing the transfer curriculum policy for PSEO students and also how to standardize programs such as AP, IB, and CLEP to provide course equivalencies across all state colleges and universities. Section 16 is again from the Miller bill, House File 197. It repeals a rule on experimental and flexible school year programs. And Madam Chair, that's Article 4.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And now we'll proceed, members, to Article 5 on special education. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, Article 5 encompasses special education. It is largely composed of the special education provisions contained in House File 1591. A number of those provisions in House File 1591 were amended to accommodate changes requested by the Commission of Deaf and Hard of Hearing. There are also bills from Representative Christensen, House File 1237, Representative Dabney, House File 1024, and Representative Wills, House File 964. Section 1 and 2 replace the director of the Minnesota Resource Center with a K-12 deaf and hard of hearing coordinator. Section 3, 4, 5, 6 are from the department, House File 1591. Section 3 requires a school board to provide transportation for a child with a disability not yet enrolled in kindergarten. Section 4 amends the definition of interagency intervention service system to include additional appropriate services that local agencies and counties provide. Section 5 directs the state agency committee to consult with the state special education advisory panel and the governor's interagency coordinating council. Section 6 delineates school board and county board responsibilities, including the responsibility.
Please proceed, Ms. Larson.
Including the responsibilities to coordinate, provide, pay for, and facilitate payment for interagency services from public and private sources, to develop and implement interagency policies and procedures, and to provide appropriate and necessary services contained in the child's IEP. Section 7 is from a bill that Representative Christensen introduced, House File 1237. It is designed to ensure that paraprofessionals have sufficient knowledge and skills to meet disability-specific and behavioral needs of students and to ensure that training is provided. Section 8 is from a bill that Representative Dabney introduced, House File 1024. It allows stakeholders to make recommendations to the Education Commissioner regarding physical holding or seclusion. Sections 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 are all from the Department of Education, House File 1591. Section 9 includes conforming changes relating to reimbursement for providing health-related services under an individualized family service plan. Section 10 requires recommendations to be submitted to the governor and various commissioners within 30 days of receiving the federal government's determination on the Minnesota Part C annual report. Section 11 directs the Education Department to offer training programs and workshops for deaf or hard of hearing, blind or visually impaired, or multiply disabled students. Section 12 allows the department to contract with nonprofit organizations to provide these programs. Section 13 directs the commissioner to establish advisory committees for both deaf and hard of hearing and visually impaired. Section 14 directs collaboration with the K-12 deaf and hard of hearing coordinator. Section 15 is part of a bill that Representative Wills introduced, House File 964. It contains two of the five proposals. One proposal directs the Education Department to help special education teachers comply with legal requirements related to providing special education and related services. And the other proposal would direct the Education Department, in collaboration with special education teachers and administrators, to identify strategies to reduce the time spent on completing paperwork. Section 16 is also from the bill that Representative Dabney introduced, House File 1024. It appropriates funding for training and technical assistance in order to reduce districts' use of seclusion and restraint on students with complex needs. Section 17 is from the department. It repeals a subdivision on resource centers and programs for deaf or hard of hearing, blind or visually impaired, and pupils with multiple disabilities. And that, Madam Chair, is Article 5.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And members, we will proceed to Article 6 on charter schools. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, Article 6 encompasses charter schools. Many of the sections in this article are from Representative Erickson's bill proposing to recodify charter school statutes and proposals from the Department, House File 1591. Section 1 is about the recodification. It's from House File 1384. Section 2 is a combination of House File 1384 on the recodification and a proposal from the department in House File 1591. That would require a charter school authorizer intending to withdraw as an authorizer for reasons unrelated to statutory causes for non-renewal or termination to notify charter schools and the commissioner by July 15th of its intent to withdraw on June 30th in the next calendar year, regardless of when the authorizer's five-year term of approval ends. Section 3, again, is a combination of the recodification proposal in House File 1384 and a proposal from the department in 1591. The department is proposing to require an authorizer to file an affidavit to charter a new school at least 14 months before July 1 of the year in which the new charter school would begin to serve students. Section 4, again, is another combination of these two bills, 1384 and 1591. The department is proposing to allow a charter school to offer a fee-based preschool or pre-kindergarten program and also would prohibit charter schools from charging tuition except for these fee-based preschool or pre-kindergarten programs. Section 5 is a combination of a bill that Representative Erickson introduced, House File 1485, and proposals from the department. Representative Erickson is proposing to allow a charter school to give an enrollment preference to children eligible to receive a free or reduced-price lunch according to the circumstances and criteria described in the paragraph. Department is proposing to allow a charter school that offers a free preschool or pre-kindergarten program to give preference to those children enrolled in the program who are eligible to enroll in kindergarten in the next school year. Section 6 is a proposal from the department. It would require a charter school to comply with statutory approval and payment of special education program requirements and also other requirements related to the costs for educating pupils with disabilities. Section 7 is a proposal from the department. It would allow a charter school to combine its required annual report with the report required for the world's best workforce. Section 8 is from a bill that Representative Erickson introduced, House File 1657. It allows a charter school authorizer to terminate if in the previous three consecutive school years the performance of the charter school would place the school in the bottom 10% of all public schools. Section 9 is a proposal from the department, House File 1591. It would allow charter schools to merge. It provides for the transfer of the fund balances and debts and indicates how aid is calculated and paid. Section 10 is from Representative Erickson's proposal to recodify the charter school statutes, as is Section 11. Those two provisions appear in House File 1384. Madam Chair, that is Article 6.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, and we'll proceed now to Article 7, General Education, which is largely a department technical changes. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, Article 7 is entitled General Education. You are correct. Article 7 contains the entirety of House File 1591, Article 1, and there is one additional section in addition to what the department proposed. That is Section 4. It is from Representative Runbeck's House File 332 on early literacy. It would allow basic skills revenue to be used to implement local literacy plans. Madam Chair, that is Article 7.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, and we'll proceed to Article 8, Libraries, Other Facilities, and Technology.
Madam Chair, thank you. Article 8 combines the two articles in House File 1591, Articles 4 and 6. Section 1 would strike the requirement that a school district have a current technology plan on file as a condition for filing an E-rate application, and Section 2 would require the governing board of a regional library system to employ a chief administrative officer compensated by no more than one regional library system. Madam Chair, that is Article 8.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And finally, Article 9, state agencies.
Madam Chair, members, Article 9 encompasses state agencies. It has quite a number of sections from the department bill, House File 1591. Article 7, it pertains to, or many of the sections included in this article from the department bill pertain to the timing of reports. They are sections 1, 3, 5, 6, and 7. Section 2 has to do with the distribution of assets and liabilities. It would require the split of fees that would be due to the Office of Administrative Hearings if there were a dispute that would require the commissioner to involve an ALJ in resolving a matter having to do with withdrawing from a cooperative unit. And Madam Chair, Section 4 is from House File 394. It's another part of Representative Freeburg's bill. It would direct the Education Commissioner to create a service learning specialist position in the department, and it also allows the Commissioner to provide for or contract for support. And then Section 9 that in this article is also from the department, and it would make the sites of a charter school not receiving QCOMP funding eligible for fiscal year 2015 teacher development and evaluation revenue. And Madam Chair, that is the last article.
And thank you, Ms. Larson. And again, thank you for all the time you spent constructing this delete all, and for working with our committee this session. This is phenomenally involved work, members, and we need to appreciate our nonpartisan House staff for their work. And with that, members, we're going to open to comments from the public, from those who are in the audience. So we'll begin with Roger Arnson. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Roger Arnson. I represent the elementary and secondary principals organizations, and it's a pleasure here to visit this morning about the omnibus policy bill and the delete everything amendment. When we spoke to you earlier in the year, we asked that in terms of your overall process this year, that you limit the number of new initiatives that you're sending out to us, and that you allow us to continue to implement teacher evaluation, the bullying bill, some the EL language from last year. And frankly, we're very pleased that we think that you did that for us. This is a bill that to a certain extent is minimally invasive with what we're going to be doing in public schools. We think this is supportive of what we're trying to do in public schools. There are some elements in here that we like very much, that we're very pleased. I would say the licensure provisions, in addition, are going to help our outstate Minnesota principals significantly in terms of filling vacant teaching positions. But also, we're really interested in the little corrections that you made with the Board of School Administrators for us. We do have a concern with one of the little pieces of language that got picked up in House File 2, and that has to do with the assignment of students into classrooms. We'll talk to you a little bit more about that as time goes on. We know what you're trying to do in that provision and the message that you're trying to send. That's Article 1, Section 16. But it does pose some practical problems for us. And the legislature has largely stayed out of the question of assigning kids into classrooms. And just to say a couple small things is it may be the right fit regardless of whether the teacher had a lower evaluation rating. The parents may indeed want that. And so we'll continue to work with you on that, and we've worked with the authors on the Senate side on that as well. I would say one thing for particularly with the secondary principals, there are testing changes in here, but the sense among your high school principals is that the testing changes really don't go far enough, and we need to talk to you about that a lot more. In a perfect world, if the secondary principals could come in and tell you what they wanted, we frankly would like to see the MCAs go away. If we, you know, I mean, that, and that's the perfect world part of that. But that's really what those folks want, and that's what they asked me to come here and talk to you about. A little thing, we'll talk with council, and there's some references in here to vice principals, and we actually don't call them vice principals in Minnesota. We call them assistant principals. We'll get that fixed up, I'm certain, by Thursday. But we really do want to, and obviously there's a major initiative in here with the House File 2, and we continue to talk about that, and we will continue to talk about that as this bill goes through the process. But we really do want to thank you, and I would say on a second level as well, for all of us that are the advocates, this is a very pleasurable committee to come to. We are treated very well in here. I think we're listened to by both sides of the aisle, as we always are, and frankly, sometimes we forget to mention that, and also the accommodations that we receive from your staff and from Lisa Larson and House Research as well. Carmen and Lisa are just excellent to work with. So, Madam Chair, thank you very much, and congratulations on a good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Arntz. Jim Bartholomew from the Business Partnership. Members, I'm calling first those who notified Ms. Mayo that they wanted to testify. Then we'll call on others. Welcome, Mr. Bartholomew. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Thank you. And we first, as you prepare to act on your 2015 policy bill, we'd like to say thank you as well for all the work you've done throughout the legislative session on behalf of Minnesota students. We think House File 1591 will make a positive impact, and we'd ask that you adopt it. I'd like to start out by highlighting just some of the proposals in Article 2 that not only reduce and streamline state assessments by repealing the Explore, Plan, and Compass exams, but also retain the reading and math MCAs in grades 3 through 8. Section 7 also creates a really helpful set of information for students and families. Specifically, this asks the Commissioner of Education and the Chancellor of Minscu to identify MCA performance levels that shows students are ready to move on to post-secondary education. This is something that will help students know where they are relative to their expectations and still have time in high school to prepare before they graduate. This provision, as well as a couple provisions in Article 4 that Ms. Larson mentioned, will build a stronger bridge between our K-12 and post-secondary systems. And these provisions in Article 4 help ensure that dual enrollment credits once earned are accepted and transferable amongst Minscu institutions. We also think Article 6 does a good balance in addressing concerns about persistently low-performing charter schools. Section 8 clarifies that authorizers may close these schools, but it also gives an authorizer the ability to explain why it chooses not to close a school. And under this type of a circumstance, this is a helpful conversation to have. We'd also like to thank Representative Erdahl for his work in Article 1 on creating an acceptable, accessible source of information for potential teacher candidates, the public, and frankly, the boards of teaching and school administrators. As this information is refined and used more frequently, it will play a key role in efforts to recognize top-performing programs. And finally, we believe the provisions in Article 1 that streamline our licensure process for out-of-state teachers and make a teacher's performance a factor during layoffs will help our schools attract and retain effective and more diverse teachers. Specifically, in regard to including teacher performance during layoffs, we believe this is a sensible change for Minnesota. 40 other states allow districts to consider teacher performance under these circumstances. So again, thank you for your commitment to the Minnesota students, and we ask that you support House File 1591.
But delete all that is. Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Ms. Christ. Welcome to our committee. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Cindy Crest with the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. I will say that while I can't echo the previous comments quite as much excitement about what's in the bill, I do want to reiterate how grateful I am. I've always felt very well respected and listened to when I speak before your committee, and a big part of that is how you manage this committee as chair. So I'm grateful for that.
Thank you, Ms. Chris.
Even when I know you don't agree with me, you always give me a respectful opportunity to be heard.
Oh, I probably agree with you more than I don't. So please proceed. Okay, you have a very important job.
There are many provisions, primarily in Article 1, that I could comment on this morning. And I'm going to comment on many of them, but be very brief on each, because I think most of the points I'm going to make today I've made before. But I just want to reiterate them, kind of highlight them. And I hope that in going through this, I scribbled my notes in such a way that I can read them. The first is, and this is, I think I may have found one of those very rare instances in which Ms. Larson made an error, because I believe on page 2 in the bill, it says that our teacher prep programs are encouraged to provide year-long student teaching, and the bill summary says required. And that was probably just carried over from what you had done in the previous bill. But,
and Ms. Christ, we're making those corrections in the summary.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I think she already discovered that. So
all right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And we're grateful for that. We would love, our programs would all love to have as many of our students as possible do year-long student teaching. It's a great concept, but it would be expensive to put in place and challenging to manage in the current environment. So we are grateful for that change. On page 4, lines 4.20 to 4.29, there's a long and appropriate list of ways in which a candidate could demonstrate that they have what it takes to be licensed. Our concern here, however, is that this is a list, this is an or list, not an and list. I think the key or that I'm talking about is on line 4.26. And as we read this with that or, it would mean that a candidate from another state could potentially be licensed based only on any one of these standards. So, for example, depth of content methods or general pedagogy. I would not think we would want to be licensing people coming from out of state based on that sole criteria. So I wonder if you might not want to say and have somebody have to demonstrate all of these, but I'm wondering if there's a way that this list could indicate that it would have to be more than one of these, not just one. On pages 5 to 6, we've talked in this committee before about our concern about the preparation performance data listed. We shared with you information about all the data we're already sharing publicly. We recognize comments that some of you made about the fact that even though many of those are publicly available, they're not easy to find. They're not always easy to sort through and understand. And so what we would like to respectfully suggest is that you consider, instead of having this be a requirement that would take place beginning 2016, somehow add some language that would indicate that the Board of Teaching and Board of School Administrators, in cooperation with MACD, work toward somehow annually collecting and reporting data. Perhaps even list, keep the whole list here, but charge us to bring back to you in a year a proposal for what might be better reported publicly. It seems to me that that would lay out the expectation that you have that we find ways to help the public know more about what we're doing. It would let us sort through collectively the purposes for which the data would be reported, what people might want to see. MACD has already begun conversations with the Board of Teaching about how we might take data that is currently reported and find ways to make it easier for people to find and easier to access. So you could even, as I said, leave this whole list of data to be reported, but let this group sort through and then come back to you and say, these three are reported. We can make them easily available. These would be very difficult to do, and we're not sure they would tell you much, and so on. So that's a suggestion that we would make. On pages 6 to 7, the language at the bottom of page 6 and the top of page 7, we would frankly welcome ways to get more information about how effective our graduates have been in the classroom. We really appreciate the language here considering data privacy issues where the numbers are too small to protect privacy concerns and a legal standpoint. Our only concern here is that this is based on the effectiveness categories. And from what I've heard from many of my K-12 colleagues, I think there's some concerns that that system has not yet quite been tested enough for us to feel confident that those effectiveness categories are appropriate. So we wonder if it's a little bit too soon to move to a reporting requirement based on categories that we're not sure have really been tested and proven to be effective. On page 11, we're concerned near the bottom of the page with the removal of the language. This is for candidates prepared outside of the state. A removal of the language about their having prepared or completed programs essentially equivalent in content to what's required in Minnesota. We think that essentially equivalent language is good. It doesn't say identical. And frankly, we think that on page 14, lines 14.1 to 14.9, looking at interstate agreements, that language seems to us to really be the appropriate language for considering equivalency. So we would like to suggest that maybe you look at that and see if that could be the language that would define all of this. I'd just point out that without that, the provision you've just added, for example, on rulemaking to include suicide prevention in Minnesota rules for teacher preparation, that's something candidates prepared in other states would not have had. And if there's no system for judging essential equivalency, there'd be no way to make up that deficiency. I have a lot more that I would mention, but I'm sure you want me to finish up, so let me just look here at a couple of others that were particularly important to us, and I'll just mention, I think, two more.
Ms. Chris, take your time, because we're using this time to learn, so
I didn't want to take more
than... Be specific in your suggestions so that we may... consider those.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Please
I wanted
proceed.
To be respectful of your time, the committee's time. Okay, on page 12, I've lost my place here momentarily. Let me make sure I... on page 12, lines 12.21 to 12.23, I think it's really important that we do look, continue to look more carefully at our expectations for candidates prepared outside the state and how to recognize their teaching experience in lieu of student teaching. And in talking to Aaron Doan, the executive director of the Board of Teaching, I understand that it actually the requirements for out-of-state teachers who come to Minnesota to still do student teaching is not as onerous as some of us, including myself, thought. But as I understand it, sometimes the folks in our programs don't understand and think that they have to require some candidates to student teach when they don't. So I think shining a brighter light on this and sorting through this is really important. Our only concern there is whether somebody having completed field-specific teaching methods alone would be a sufficient proxy for student teaching. There again, there's the or. So as I read it, to say they've either completed field-specific teaching methods, student teaching, or equivalent experience, or have at least 2 years of teaching experience, that would replace the requirement for out-of-state folks. And I would not think that you would want simply field-specific teaching methods to be enough to tell you whether somebody in practice in the classroom has the skills that they need. Again, sometimes with these ors, I think there's a question of intent, and I may not be clear on what your intent is there. I already mentioned for the top of page 14, the interstate requirements. I think you've really done a masterful job there of taking the previous language, listening to testimony, and crafted something that makes it clear that you expect that the Board of Teaching is going to work to make it much easier for us to have these interstate agreements. It will support the work the Board of Teaching is already doing to make that happen. And I just think that's wonderful language that can set a model for much of what we're trying to do with out-of-state teachers. On lines 15.2 and 15.3, the top of page 15, We think that there might be an unintended consequence with this language. This is language for folks completing alternative programs. And that language that says this limited term license is not a provisional license, I believe what that means is that somebody, and currently I think TFA is the only program approved in Minnesota to offer an alternative pathway. So I'm not targeting this to TFA, I'm only mentioning them because they are the only entity right now that under which candidates could pursue this option. And so saying that the limited term license under which they're teaching is not provisional would mean, I believe, that they would continue to be licensed regardless of how they had performed in that program. It would not say that they would have to complete the program and be judged by the TFA folks in collaboration with the University of Minnesota to have successfully completed it. So automatically saying that that's not a provisional license, we believe, is problematic. One of our... Okay, and on that page also, on line 15.16, to say that the board may permit instructors to hold a baccalaureate degree only. I believe this is instructors in those alternative preparation programs. It's always been, to my knowledge, kind of the standard in education that a person doing an instructing is expected, in this sort of official role, is expected to have a higher level of preparation than the folks being instructed. In Minnesota, it's always been a requirement that they have a master's degree. And this language would change that. And I would just ask the committee to consider whether you really want to lower that standard. One of our biggest concerns, and you've heard me say this before, are the changes for non-licensed community experts and allowing districts simply to report to the Board of Teaching when they've hired these folks. We recognize, you know, what we think is good language about efforts that have to have been made by the district to hire a licensed person first. And I know some of my K-12 colleagues say, you know, administrators have students' best interests at heart, just trust us. Well, it's not that we don't trust them, but I've been in Board of Teaching meetings when applications for approval of non-licensed community experts have come in, and they have not included evidence of districts having to do what they're currently required to do. Cases, for example, where they have not advertised as they are required to. So we kind of think this is one of those cases where trust but verify is a good approach to take. And we believe that the Board of Teaching should still have the authority, and there should still be the expectation that they will approve the hiring of non-licensed community experts. Page 17, the top of page 17, I think our folks think it was reasonable for part-time CTE teachers. Obviously, the correction to career and technical ed here is an important one because that is what they're called now. Temporary, part-time, perhaps not being licensed, we don't think it's a good idea for them to be, if they're teaching up to full-time, to be entirely exempt from licensure. We think their preparation is as important as anybody else's. And then the last two things that I would highlight is we're grateful to see continuing attention to teacher mentoring. We'd probably ideally like it to say that all new teachers have to have a mentor because we think that's such an important part in the teacher development continuum. My guess is, all things being equal, everybody on this committee would also agree to that. I don't think anybody would say, no, we don't think new teachers need mentors. I recognize there are many factors involved there, including costs, would take a lot of resources, but in any event, we're grateful to see you continuing to focus on this important stage in the development of teachers in the classroom. And then finally, we really appreciate the language on project-based learning, page 34. We think this is a good approach, as I said previously in committee, and the P20 partnership addressed this too. We see project-based learning really as an instructional strategy, not an area or field of licensure, but this approach to have some work done collaboratively with higher ed and P12 and folks who do project-based learning seems like a really good approach to see how it works and sort through what are the implications for teacher preparation and then bring back to you some ideas so that students, we know there are a lot of students who really learn best with a project-based learning approach. Be great to encourage it and to figure out ways in which more teachers can develop more skills in taking a project-based learning approach. So that's longer, more time than I thought you would give me and maybe than I should have taken, but I appreciate the opportunity to walk through all of those items of concern, and I hope I identified enough that we like as well as the ones that we don't.
Thank you, Ms. Chris. That was very thorough, and thank you very much. Next, we have Brad Lundell. And then after Mr. Lundell, anyone who wants to come forward, please come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell from Minnesota Administrators of Special Education today. I wanted to thank you for all your work on special education. The discussions that we've had this year, I think, have been very fruitful. And I really, the organization really appreciates the opportunity to come before you and voice some of their concerns. We're especially happy to see the provisions from House File 964 from Representative Will's bill contained in the legislation. We look forward to working with you and working with the representative going forward. The one concern that we do have, though, is outside the special ed article, the language on page 66 relating to dyslexia. Some concern there whether or not the legislature is actually designating a certain body of students as being automatically eligible for special education. Because it's saying there dyslexia means a specific learning disability. That dyslexia, like many other challenges, lie along a spectrum. And that spectrum is addressed in rule as to how to identify or where you are eligible for special education. And we think that this language might cloud that a bit. With that, again, we certainly look forward to working with this committee as the bill moves through the process, and very, very thankful for the opportunity to come forward with concerns and the audience that we've had this year. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell, and thank you for that notation on dyslexia. If you have specialists who could see us, we'd appreciate that. Thank you. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin, Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director, Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Just a couple of preliminary comments about the bill. First, thank you for the work of the chair and the committee and the House staff for doing a great job of putting the bill together. Some of the areas that we're excited about, we appreciate the concept regarding flexibility within the school calendar and empowering school boards to work within their communities to make some decisions. We have a number of school districts that currently are on four-day weeks that at this point in time we're going to be reverting back to a five-day week, and as those superintendents have talked with me, they would prefer to stay with the four-day week. They think it's in the best interest of the children of the district. It's worked well, and so we appreciate that flexibility. We also appreciate the work that's being done in the area of licensure. We've talked about that with the committee and the strides that are being made here to try and provide additional pathways for our colleagues from other states is greatly appreciated, and I know our superintendents will be thankful. A lot of conversation about assessments, and we're still studying the various proposals, but we do appreciate the fact that student assessments and the amount of time that's currently being spent, the number of assessments that currently are being required, that is under close examination, and we know that as we move forward in the remainder of the session, there will be hopefully a package that comes forward that will provide for a reduction in the number of assessments while maintaining the accountability. So we thank you for the attention to that. Just a couple of areas of concern. One of the areas is about the PSEO advertising. We just had a change to the law that went into effect for the current year, so we're in year one of that law change. It's referenced, I believe, in 62.1, page 62 of the bill. We'd like to see the current law be given a little bit more time to actually be implemented before we start removing the restriction of the number of students in the high school level. And finally, Mr. Aronson mentioned this, but we also have some concerns regarding the placement provisions found on Article 1, Section, I believe it is 16. We're also working with the authors in the Senate who have the same type of language, and we are concerned. Of course, we want the most qualified teachers at all times, but we have situations in smaller school districts where you might only have a two-section building, where even though we know the language talks about if there's only one person teaching, the language wouldn't apply. But even if you have two people teaching in each of an elementary grade level, or if you're at a high school level, and because of this type of language, it could actually preclude a child from taking an elective that they're really interested in taking. We'd like to continue working with the author on this language to try and get the flavor of what's trying to be accomplished without putting on restrictions that we believe would be very challenging to actually implement. With that, Madam Chair, we thank you for all the work again of yourself and the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Why don't we have at least three persons come down? So, Mrs. Abderholden and Ms. Dietrich. So we're more efficient. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAVI Minnesota, and I just want to thank you for the inclusion of two items in the bill. The first, expanding the continuing education for teachers to include suicide prevention. I think that's wonderful, and just really thank you for doing that. And the second is your continuing support to reduce the use of seclusion and restraint of our special ed students. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Dietrich, please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And first of all, I'd like to make a couple general comments about the bill. We want to thank you and the committee for your diligence in focusing on and staying very focused on teaching and learning this legislative session. I also want to thank you for, I think it's always very, speaks very highly of your work when you can include Democrat and Republican and department bills, and it seems like you have struck a nice balance there. So I applaud you for that. The one thing I also want to thank you for is that you heard a real strong message this legislative session, and that was about our teacher shortage. And you have included many provisions that will help that discussion continue to go further. By streamlining the out-of-state teacher provisions, the ULA, actually, we think that will help also help teacher shortage issues, because I do believe that we need to attract new people to the teaching profession, and when there are restrictions such as using only seniority when you are when you're making layoffs, will deter young people from going into the teaching profession. So, and then to continue the portfolio-based performance. For teachers that we think is very important. The interstate agreements, the mentorship, teacher retention is also just as important as attracting new people to the profession. With that, though, I would like to say I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I think there are some challenges with implementing these, because all of the responsibility falls on the Board of Teaching. And we have heard over and over again about how overburdened the Board of Teaching is. So what are going to be, and in fact, some of these things are already currently in law, but they have not been executed. So how are we going to be assured that the streamlining provisions will actually be implemented by the timelines that you give, because the timelines also are very short? So that is one concern. The next, moving on to the learning, the project-based learning is very positive. The flexibility with the math standards and then being able to use computer science in place of math, we appreciate the fact that we are moving towards being more flexible with students and moving them into STEAM. The testing elimination piece, we think that needs more discussion with a broader group of stakeholders. School board members feel very strongly that we are over-testing our children, and so how we get there, though, is of great concern. And I must say that the one piece of your testing provision gives a little bit concern of tying a score to a level of post-secondary that they might be successful at. That, at least in my opinion, speaks to some level of tracking And I think that when students graduate from high school, we want them to think that all opportunities are theirs. So I would like to be able to talk with you more about that. Then in Article 4, very positive is the flexible learning year. We wish you would have taken it one step further and included start before Labor Day, but that didn't make sense. But we do appreciate the board discretion in determining the school week. The other two provisions that I just want to highlight are the transfer of the credit language on page 33, and then the PSEO transfer of credit and curriculum is also very positive and going in the right direction. So the one last thing, though, in Article 5 is your delineation of county responsibilities and school board responsibilities. We are going to take a deeper delve into that and make sure that there are no unintended consequences for school board members of additional responsibilities that maybe we weren't aware of, and look at the original bill. So with that, Madam Chair, I will conclude my comments. Once again, I want to thank you and the committee for all your work this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Holly Craig-Thorpe. I'm a Minneapolis Public School Teachers on Leave of Absence, and I represent Educators for Excellence, and thank you for passing out a handout of our major priorities. I want to thank all of you for all of your hard work, taking time to meet with me and our teacher members, making me feel welcome and respected here. And in particular, I want to thank Dare Erickson and Representative Erdahl and Representative Mariani and Representative Moran and Representative Dabney for meeting with teachers. And we're really pleased to see that two of the three of our major priorities are present in the omnibus bill. I want to thank Representative Fenton and Representative Erdahl for your leadership on the components of accountability for teacher prep and streamlining the process for out-of-state teachers. I want to take just a brief moment to advocate for the inclusion of House File 1629, which would allow districts to have the flexibility to use QCOMP funds in a new way. We're not asking for additional funds. Right now, statute only allows funds to be used for a personal goal, team goal, and a school-wide goal, and we're asking for statute that would include a bonus for teachers that are effective or highly effective, to move or to move to a hard-to-staff school or to stay at a hard-to-staff school, so we can make sure that we're leveling the playing field a bit and getting the best teachers in the classrooms that need them most. And we look forward to working with you the rest of session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Craigthorne.
Welcome, Dr. Nolan, please say your name for the record and begin.
Fred Nolan with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. And again, I want to echo what my colleagues have said, how good it is working with the committee and the staff of the committee. There's a lot in this bill that will help education in rural Minnesota and across the state. I won't go through the litany. We have a couple concerns as well. But I do want to raise an issue that is in Article 1, page 1, and that has to do with saying that there needs to be a test for all teachers to have college-level skills in reading, math, and literacy. I know that sounds odd, but with the great variety of teachers in Minnesota, with the incredible diverse skills you need to reach students at all levels, there are a number of teachers currently working on variances who are unable to pass these tests, whether it's test anxiety, whether it's someone has a learning disability, whether it's just that their strength is in wonderfully reaching kids, it's just not doing college-level mathematics. We would like you to address that issue. We think the data is in front of you to have a data-driven decision about this. We have young people in the teaching field today who didn't pass at a college level. We have young people who did. We have evaluations. We have MCA test data from the elementary grades for those that are teaching elementary. We would request that you consider forestalling this decision, actually looking at the data, creating a study with the Center for Applied Research and Innovation Education at the university, and come up with a real number. what is the number at which, above which you're an effective teacher, below which you're not? Instead of just sticking a finger in the air and saying, oh, I think everyone should be at this level or this level or this level. You have a very good way of going about this. We'd recommend you consider that. Other than that, we have some other issues, but on the whole, very good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Nolan. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Josh Crossan, and I'm with Minnesota's Campaign for Achievement Now, a nonprofit based here in Minnesota. I'd like to echo all of the comments and thank you all just in one lump sum that for all of your hard work this year. The provisions in HF2, MNCAN is extremely excited about a lot of them, mainly the student-teacher placements, the cooperating teacher part that Representative Erdahl's language was able to come into HF2. I think we want to step that a bit further by including quality as well as the length of time in a student-teacher experience. So we hope to see some of those changes in the near future. We also really appreciate providing flexibility in the curriculum, as mentioned already. But as we know, if we allow certain career and technical education courses, students, especially students of color and low-income kids, will have an opportunity to thrive and grow and increase their graduation rate. So we really appreciate those measures as well. As for the out-of-state licensure pieces, I really wanted to comment on previous testimony. Line 4.26, the use of and instead of or, MNCAN supports that provision. I think it was the intent of the author to ensure that the Board of Teaching has some sort of flexibility around these measures. So if folks support and instead of or, we would be more than happy to support that as well. Lines 11.29 and 11.31, the use of essentially equivalent. This provision in current laws is particularly troubling when applying that to out-of-state licenses. What we're seeing right now is a bean counting experience with out-of-state teachers. If their license or their transcripts aren't exactly the same as a Minnesota license or transcript, then that person is then required at many times to get a new degree or diploma. And we've seen that with a testifier already mentioned, Nicole Bridge, who took the required courses but then was required to then get another master's degree on top of her master's degree she already has, simply because her master's degree wasn't a Minnesota degree. So we'd really like to see this change stick within this legislation regarding essentially equivalent experience. Lines 12.21 to 12.23, the use of field-specific. The term field-specific has yet to be defined by the Board of Teaching, yet we require it for all incoming students. So this legislation simply requires field-specific or student teaching be a requirement to obtain a Minnesota license. So we like the change in the current legislation, or the amendment of the legislation. And lines 15.16, the use of may specifically is key here. The Board of Teaching may permit instructors in alternatively certified programs to hold a baccalaureate degree. The Board of Teaching can still have the rulemaking power here and not instruct and not allow instructors without a master's degree or without a master's degree PhD to become instructors. But what we really wanted to focus on here is alternatively certified programs are alternatively certified programs. They have non-traditional methods that the legislature should be able to give flexibility to these programs in the future. So with that, we want to thank the chair for introducing this legislation. And yeah, if you have any questions, I'll be around.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hartnett, please introduce yourself and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I too want to thank everybody for the hard work.
Please say your name for the record.
My name is Mary Hartnett, Executive Director of the Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans, and want to thank everybody for all of their work, particularly and the staff and the department for working on two different provisions, one that ensures that there will be a full-time specialist overseeing the work of the of advisory committees of the deaf and the blind. In an effort to update language within the department, we were afraid that the specialist position would go away. We're glad that the 4,000 kids in the state that are deaf and hard of hearing will have somebody overseeing those services and ensuring that teachers are getting the training that they need. We do hope that we're able to convene a group of stakeholders. The department kind of did that on their own, and we believe that we could strengthen that and make it an even better part of the statute by convening stakeholders and coming back and looking at how we can update that advisory committee. And then second, we're still working with the department on the provisions for the Metro Deaf School, and we're thankful to Representative Wills for really taking special interest in that. We'll be meeting with the department at noon. It's a complicated statute. There's only two charter schools in the state that have 90% or plus enrollment for special ed students, and a lot of times these charter schools, particularly Metro Deaf School, I know about that school, but I believe Fraser too, get hit when changes or different enforcements occur. So it's complicated. We'll be coming back with a solution, I'm sure, sometime later this afternoon, I hope. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member Sam Walseth, and I'm representing the Educational Cooperatives and Education Districts on a very technical piece of the bill found in Article 9, Section 9, where you are cleaning up some language and making a fix for charter school sites. This is related to teacher development and evaluation revenue session law from 2014. We would like to see educational cooperative and educational district also included in that section. Often we don't think of those entities as providing direct instruction, but there are some of those entities who actually do employ teachers who are covered by the TDE statute and do provide direct instruction. I think they were somewhat inadvertently left out of last year's bill, and there is some legislation introduced, I think, pending before the Ed Finance Committee to deal with that. But since here, Madam Chair, we saw an opportunity here with your bill making the fix for the charter sites, that possibly an amendment to include those other entities would be prudent as you move this bill forward. There may be a slight fiscal impact of that. I think it's very small in the Senate, and the hearing a few weeks ago, I think we're talking in the range of about $10,000 or $20,000. I'll have to dig up that fiscal note, but certainly as a matter of policy, to have a policy position to make sure that those teachers working in those entities are covered as well. We would appreciate your consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Walseth. Others who would like to provide comment this morning?
Representative Erickson.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, as I look around. Mr. Donham, you're really here. Thank you. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Josh Donham with the Minneapolis Public Schools. We want to say thank you to the author for including three particular provisions that Minneapolis has testified before this committee on. The seals of biliteracy changes that Representative Norton authored. We do have one small clarification. I know that Minsky is going to request around the look-back period of 3 years, but we can work with Ms. Larson on that.
Yes, thank you.
And also the disaggregating data by homeless and highly mobile students, Representative Dabney's bill, we think that's going to be very helpful for the committee and for the district to help get some more kind of comparison data. And then obviously the licensure changes that this committee has included. We do believe that will help broaden the pool of potential licensed teachers so that we can have a more diverse teaching pool. We do have one small concern. We'd love to work with Representative Bennett on this. We want to echo Representative Mariani's concerns about the establishing those scores for getting into the three levels of college, knowing that we don't want to essentially set a de facto cut score, but we're happy to work with the authors on working on that language. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Donham. Are there others? We do have rules coming in at 10, so we'd like to hear from anyone else. I'm sure those who aren't speaking today will see me, and that's great. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to echo many of the compliments to the chair and to the committee that have been shared today. I think you have a very strong bill here, Madam Chair. There are provisions here that I, particularly in Article 1, that greatly concern me, but, you know, we'll have amendments and we'll have that discussion. However, I've been in your shoes, and I have to tell you and the members, I greatly appreciate the instrument that you've constructed and brought before us. I know what it takes to be able to do that, and my sincere compliments for what I believe is, even with my disagreements and some key pieces here, what I think is a very solid and strong bill.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Appreciate that very much. Well, I think hearing no other concerns or comments, we meet on Thursday. You will know when the amendment deadline is set by Ms. Mayo's posting, which is 3 p.m. on Wednesday. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.